declaration beginning of every, or give it out, before we begin our classes. And briefly, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principle of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim and purpose and teaching. Therefore, has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by studying otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Briefly, this is your first visit. We advise you to pick up one of these little yellow pamphlets out front in the foyer or at the usher's table. Briefly, this being June and the 19th, our topic this morning will be Kuan Yin, the Pledge of True Renunciation. And as you can see by this, that next week, Wednesday, June the 22nd, will be a special meeting day. It's called ULT Day, the mission of the United Lodge of Theosophists. Since the doors open at 5:15 on Wednesday, so that you have a couple hours in the library until 7:15, and then the class begins, the meeting begins promptly at 7:30, will last till 8:30. And as was stated, special meeting, honoring Robert L. Crosby, ULT Day. We advise you to get here a little early if you're not in the library, so that a few moments of contemplation on the subject until it opens at probably at 7:30. We're just checking to see if we, oh yes, during the summer we'll be studying the Bhagavad Gita, and on Wednesdays, That Is That Have Helped Me by Robert Crosby. Excuse me a moment. Now, it's our custom to begin the meeting with a short reading. And it's from the Voice of the Silence to Seven Quarters. If thou wouldst have that stream of hard-earned knowledge of wisdom, heaven-born, remain sweet running waters. Thou shouldst not leave it to become a stagnant pond. No, if a Mehetabha, the boundless age, thou wouldst become co-worker, and then must thou shed the light acquired. Like to the Bodhisattva's twain upon the span of all three worlds. Know that the stream of superhuman knowledge and deva wisdom thou hast won must from thyself, the channel of Elia, be poured forth into another vein. Know, O Narjo, thou the secret path. Its pure fresh waters must be used to sweeter make the ocean's bitter waves. That mighty sea of sob formed of the tears of men. Alas, when once thou hast become like the fixed star in highest heaven, that bright celestial orb must shine from out the spatial depths for all, save for itself. Give light to all, but take from none. Kuan Yin, the pledge of true renunciation.
We would like to read the pledge of Kuan Yin first, just so that everybody who maybe isn't familiar with the pledge will have a reference point for the meeting. Never will I seek nor receive private individual salvation. Never will I enter into final peace alone. But forever and everywhere will I live and strive for the redemption of every creature throughout the world from the bonds of conditioned existence. So we'll be looking at a number of things today, a little bit of a background on Kuan Yin. Her pledge, of course, we'll be looking at towards the end, what a pledge is and the importance of a pledge. And then, of course, this idea of true renunciation. Theosophy looks at renunciation and the pledge in quite a different manner than most people usually look at these. And since this month's overview topic is practical theosophy, we'll also look at these are very high ideals that we're going to be talking about today. So how do we bring them into this idea of practical theosophy? And this is, for an hour class, this is really a huge, huge undertaking, because the idea of Kuan Yin, and many people think of her as being a person, but everything in life is dual in the universe, and looking at Kuan Yin and her aspect of universality is a duality as well. She is actually the female aspect of the second logos. Logos being the second logos is an outward expression of manifestation. So when we're looking at the second one, we think this quote is from HPB. It says, "It is Kuan Yin that is the female principle, or the manifested passive, manifesting itself to every creature in the universe in order to deliver all men from the consequences of sin." She is also, and there's a male aspect that is the principle of the first logos, and that name is Quan Shi Yin, and oftentimes these two get mixed up because the names are so similar. But this is the male active. So when we're looking at the universe, then we're looking at manifestation. We're looking at the active being the first logos when manifestation first began, and then the second logos is Kuan Yin, or the passive piece of it. And she's also known as the voice. And so these are the two aspects, then, male and female, of the same principle of the cosmos, nature and man, of divine wisdom and intelligence. Kuan Yin is also known as the Bodhisattva of compassion, the goddess of compassion. And it's interesting because many other religions have her personality as some of the people that they worship. Like the Virgin Mary is considered to be Kuan Yin, as is Isis and Shakti. She's also thought to be the magic potency of the occult sound in nature and the ether. And although many of these ancient teachings are expressing very high metaphysical ideas, many years ago in China, they felt as though in order for the people to understand who and what Kuan Yin is, they decided to anthropomorphize her, and they made her into a woman. So this way they felt as though it would help them to understand these ideas. So then we'll look at this idea of true renunciation. So renunciation means the formal rejection of something, typically a belief, a claim, or a course of action. But when we are considering true renunciation, though, then what is the difference? And Theosophy says there is a big difference when we're looking at this idea of true renunciation. The Bhagavad Gita has some, if anybody wants to do more of a search on anything about renunciation, the Bhagavad Gita has a couple chapters that are very informative on this idea. And it speaks of two different types of renunciation. One of them being the yoga type, which involves performance of works, and the Sankhya doctrine, which renounces all works, being much like an ascetic. But Krishna applauds and supports both types of renunciation, but he states that action is the better of the two. One of the problems with the Sankhya or the ascetic type is that the ascetic could renounce the materialism, and he could say this, but he may not in his heart actually renounce this idea of materialism. So and it may take him many years in which to progress his inner nature. But when we're looking at the yoga type, though, the whole idea is to do your duty. Do your duty because that is what is coming to you. To help others is the main idea with this true renunciation, is to help others and not expect anything in return. And it is said, he who gives up results of action is the true renouncer. And the Gita says in chapter 5, who, working piously, refraineth not. That is the true renouncer, firm and fixed, who, seeking naught, rejecting naught, dwells proof against the opposites. So the whole idea being that focus, it's like we talk about life's meditation, and we're looking at every day, we're to help others find the highest in everything. We have so much opportunities, so many opportunities these days to look at things and try and find and try and not hate the perpetrator. We can hate the deed, but the perpetrator needs to be loved, even though it sounds ridiculous. But this is what true renunciation is how can we put this? To help others and under no circumstances to expect anything in return. And when we're even looking at very simple things, it's like, if we're letting somebody, if we're driving and we're letting somebody out in the traffic and they don't wave thank you, it's like we're doing it because it needed to be done. This person needed to get out. We needed to get the traffic moving. But, you know, we shouldn't expect anything in return. I mean, it's a very little thing, but, you know, that it's just a simple example. So true renunciation, then, it is complete renouncing of the fruit of one's works. And it, people see this when somebody is very forthcoming and they're giving up everything because they know it is something that has to be done. And they're not asking for anything in return. So this is what true renunciation is giving and not expecting anything in return. So we'll go on to this idea of the pledge then. And we'll look at what a pledge is first, then we'll talk about Kuan Yin's pledge. The definition of a pledge is a solemn promise or undertaking. The theosophical idea of a pledge goes a little bit further, though. It is looked at as being a promise that is made to one's higher self, and it is binding until death. And it's not anything like the New Year's resolution, which normally is a materialistic, physical thing. This kind of a pledge is something that is done of one through one's higher nature. It is not of the lower mind. And it is a pledge to live the theosophical life, as we were speaking of when we were looking at the idea of renunciation. We are looking at the divine self to guide us in every thought and action. And just a couple quotes on the pledge. It is the constant effort that succeeds. A moderate and constant effort has far better results than fierce but fickle ones. The man who takes his pledge in the right spirit calls upon it and calls every help and blessing from it to his assistance. So the idea here is that the pledge is taken in the right spirit, that it is from your higher nature, in regards to everything that goes on in your day. By an intense desire to be under its protection, he places himself under the protection of the active and beneficent powers that are the direct rays of the absolute higher self. So we're looking at, when we're thinking then of true renunciation and making a pledge, it's the higher nature that is involved. So then, how are we looking at this whole idea then with Kuan Yin's pledge? So we'll read the pledge again. We just want to refresh people's minds since we're at that part of the meeting. Never will I seek nor receive private individual salvation. Never will I enter into final peace alone, but forever and everywhere will I live and strive for the redemption of every creature throughout the world from the bonds of conditioned existence. So HPB also says that it is Kuan Yin that is the female principle, or the manifested passive, manifesting itself every creature in order to deliver all men from the consequences of sin. And it is, so at the end of her pledge, she says, from the bonds of conditioned existence. One thing we did want to add is the different types of Buddhism. Her pledge is considered to be that of a Mahayana Buddhist. It says, Buddhists believe that all people are related due to reincarnation and the ongoing on the birth and death cycle. For this reason, Buddhists must help one another, which is what Kuan Yin, being the Bodhisattva from compassion, thought. And it didn't matter who the person was. I mean, they were even saying, you know, criminals are even those that feel as though they need to be helped. So when we're looking then at the Kuan Yin pledge and true renunciation and the idea of making a pledge, how do these all come together then? The whole pledge is very emphatic and very determined. She says, I will seek. I will live and strive. So she's putting this out as being a very important. She wants people to understand. She wants people to know. And then she's not looking for any results. Where is it here? She goes, never will I enter into final peace alone. So she's bringing in everybody. She's, and we're looking at the whole progress of a person's evolution here as well. That with conditioned existence, every creature, she says, throughout the world, she will strive for the redemption of every creature. She does it with a higher attitude. This whole pledge has to do with helping, with bringing the idea of universal brotherhood out to everybody. Because she goes, again, the redemption of every creature throughout the world from the bonds of conditioned existence. So the redemption then, we think, has to do with spiritual evolution and spiritual progress, because redemption from conditioned existence. And the only way one can go beyond conditioned existence, and conditioned existence meaning bringing forth one's karma to that current life, has to do with spiritual progress and spiritual evolution. So one of the things that we did want to do with the class is to, there are probably so many different ideas about her pledge and what it means. And we really think that each person, if they meditate on her her pledge, can definitely find out what it means to them and how for their life it can direct it. Because one can read it over and over again and really concentrate and meditate on it and find different pieces of it that will mean different things to them. So we would like to put it out to the group this morning, to class, if anybody wants to, you know, put it out, you know, what the pledge means to them. And as we said, we do have the idea of a pledge and what that means, and about true renunciation. Yes, in the back.
Well, the first word of the pledge is never. So that's a very strong statement, never. Of course, we can't get to never without, you know, I mean, how do, maybe the better question is, how do we get to never? How do we get to the point where we're never doing the things that we've been doing for many incarnations, many, countless incarnations?
So how do we get to never? Well, it's interesting because how to get to never could also be another way of saying how can I help others without having any expectation of anything in return? Because never is the epitome of one's spiritual progress, because we know when one is perfected, the idea of never doing, how can we say this? Like the adepts, I mean, one can almost say that they do anything wrong? And we know that they may or may not, you know, but that whole idea of never could actually be a, and we're getting flustered. Yes.
Well, it says at the end of the pledge what that never is. I mean, we overcome conditioned existence, and we're able to see reality for reality's sake. Mm-hmm. So we're no longer in that delusion. That reality is, you know, is the highest, higher consciousness, seeing things as they are.
Mm.
Conditioned existence is where we all live.
Right.
That's how we manipulate. That's and who asks why
we appreciate the idea of practical theosophy, because we did forget to bring that up at the end of our talk, which kind of fits in with this whole idea that we're talking about now. So we can add the idea of doing one's duty, and taking care of one's family is doing one's duty, but expecting nothing in return, because it's, if one's taking care of their family, that's what they're supposed to be doing. And not expecting the family to keep saying, oh, thank you, Mom, you were wonderful, this was a great dinner. It's because you're doing what it is you were supposed to do. And the whole idea then of universal brotherhood, of course, is of the focus of theosophy. It's in the Declaration. It is like the main idea that we're all striving for, is to put forth that idea of universal brotherhood, which goes back to doing one's duty, because it's something that has to be done, and helping your brother, helping those that are less fortunate. In the back?
On the road to never, we have to realize it's a real process, and it requires our attention. We start out by going, well, gee, am I selfish? I mean, am I acting for the wave to come from the other driver and the thank you from this person? So we have to become the observer, and then we start to realize, wow, I am selfish, but I didn't know I was selfish. And we begin little by little changing that. The road to never may take a thousand lifetimes, but once you're on it, you're aware that you're trying to do it.
Yes, the road to never is definitely the hard one. And Kuan Yin, I mean, she was very emphatic with that first sentence, never will I seek. So she was definitely on the road, if not at the end of it, and because she was considered a bodhisattva, and that's what we're striving for. But that shouldn't be the goal. It's like, oh, I want to be an adept. I want to be, you know, as perfected as I can. Going back to that idea of universal brotherhood, that is the reason why we do what we do. That is the reason why we want to help others, is not because of, you know, of getting the kudos at the end of the day, but when we're talking about that road to never, at least we can take a couple first steps. And maybe at some point we'll realize we're not thinking the way we used to think. And that's basically what we're aiming for. In the back?
What is so magnificent about this statement is embedded in how you open the talk, with Kuan Yin being the principle of the second logos, the beginning of conditioned experience. And impacted in that cycle is this wisdom of the compassionate law of karma, that we are beyond the conditioned, we are beyond karma, we are to use that to uplift all. And it's a wonderful universal antidote to all those religious philosophies that teach salvation for a particular soul. Or a unique savior. This is a whole different concept of eventually turning down the nirvana,
mm-hmm.
and living to benefit the all, as the second principle of that abstract logos would do. So we can take it as a practical guide, or we can expand it in meditation to the most metaphysical concept of cycles that there is.
That is the fact that, as we said in the beginning, everything is dual. When one really looks at the pledge, her pledge, it can be taken as was just said, something very metaphysical, or bring it down more to the mundane. But it's where you are at the time when you're thinking about it, because the it's a wonderful idea that she is saying the redemption of every creature, so that she is bringing everything into the fold. She is wanting everything to be raised up to progress along their evolution to at some point be free of that conditioned existence, so that they will have that, we can't get that idea of road to never out of our head, to keep on that road, on the path to their own spiritual progress. Yes.
Well, it brings to mind in the declaration that was just read, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, and organization. And in the reading, page 73 exactly, alas, when once thou hast become like the fixed star and highest heaven, that bright celestial orb must shine forth out of the spacious land for all, save for itself. And renunciation covers it. It's a word that we have to look at very well.
Mm-hmm.
And how to be able to carry out what's in the declaration. And the hints given in the reading.
Well, this is one of the things that is just so different between studying the philosophy and many of the organized religions, is that the many of the organized religions, it is individual salvation, whereas we're focusing on, we don't want to sound like spiritual pride, but we focus on this whole idea of universal brotherhood, of everything is part of the all, that we're all part of it together, we're in it together. What affects one affects all. So her pledge is every creature throughout the world from the bonds of conditioned existence, is that we, her expectation is that we will help everything to progress as much as they can, so that at some point they will as well be able to break from those bonds of conditioned existence. Mainly, it's the whole idea of karma. Yes. A little louder, please.
When you're speaking of this concept and this path of never will I, there was also another statement that you said before that struck me as interesting, that if we were to apply this constantly, then never would not seem so far away, actually. That if we're applying a steady practice, a constant practice,
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, so the whole the comment having to do with doing this idea of practice of helping others and doing for others a little bit at a time, and that's the whole thing. But awareness is an important first step. We have to be aware of what we're doing and why we're doing it. That if we just help somebody, just a little bit, you know, smiling, saying thank you. We just need to do a small bit, and just doing it consciously, doing it with the right motive, doing it so that it's going to help somebody else. That is the beginning of that path for along our path of spiritual evolution and progress, is being doing it with the right motive. Yes.
And the subject of Kuan Yin, as a theosophist, we have three examples of this principle. Even though you say she, it's really a principle. And that this principle, we see it manifest in H.P. Blavatsky, we see it manifest in Wing Q. Jung, we see it manifest in Robert Crosby, that this selfless sacrifice for humanity. And we sometimes wonder, well, they're not these great missionaries that have saved thousands of people in the world by feeding them. Well, they are feeding the minds
mm-hmm.
of this new generation, or this new humanity that's unfolding. So those ideas are these ideas which were more or less through sacrifice are put down in writing for this generation, for generations to come. Because we all know that every great teacher in the world never wrote anything down.
Mm-hmm.
Never. All through word of mouth. And their prophets would go about town just repeating what their, you know, their teacher said. So we have the words, we have the understanding in print. We can understand for ourselves. That is a freedom which we have not enjoyed as a species.
Well, in regards to the idea that they didn't save thousands of people as like with missionaries, but they planted thousands of seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And by planting all these seeds, it's like they were back in the mid-1800s, and the philosophy still survives today. So, I mean, they have planted seeds. We are planting seeds. And we don't even know where these seeds have been planted. So we have, I mean, we've been given the gift of knowing this philosophy. And we are excited about it, and we want to share it with others. And that's how, you know, we're planting the seeds. Yes.
So then in terms of, you know, practical theosophy, someone who's attracted to theosophy and comes here and studies the material, etc., if they come to a ULT, the program of the ULT is the path toward achieving this if we see it from the perspective of the declaration. Because, you know, we don't learn theosophy by reading the books and talking about it. We learn theosophy by putting it in practice, because
mm-hmm.
it's the dissemination of the philosophy and the exemplification in practice. Those are the conditions precedent to what? To recognize a true realization of the self and a profounder conviction in universal brotherhood, which is exactly what we're talking about with Kuan Yin. So that brings it back to, as theosophists, there's a lot of introspection that we need to do and mindfully maybe make adjustments in how we live our lives to attain that true realization of the self. Because the more we recognize who we truly are,
mm-hmm.
the more we recognize how we really are interconnected infinitely with everything else and act from that basis.
And there are people out there who act in this manner that probably don't even know what theosophy is. But they have, because of their karma, they have become this type of person that just gives. They don't ask anything in return, and they do what has to be done. Yet, I mean, they could be of another faith, but they're putting their faith in a higher way, and they're what Kuan Yin is saying, but they just may not know what the philosophy is all about. Yes.
Well, we think as a human being that we meet people every day, and giving a smile or having in your heart, you know, kindness for others, that people recognize this.
Mm-hmm.
They recognize the fact that you don't think they're better than they are, and you truly respect them for who they are, and that's something sometimes just by saying hello.
Mm-hmm.
Just light up. And I think we seem to forget that we have such powers. We all have those powers. You know? It's just that we have to use them and make them stronger so that not only do we love our family, but we can extend that
mm-hmm.
way beyond our family by everybody we come in contact with. So that the Kuan Yin pledge becomes a living idea. A living action in our life. It may not be the best, but we're trying. That's all that we can do is try.
Right, and the comment of you before about just doing little things along the way. That is one way that we can start, is just by saying very simple. Hi, how are you? I like your shirt, whatever. But it makes people feel better when they are recognized, and it could make the total difference in their day. We saw a movie once years ago, and it was very interesting. It started out, we think it was in India, and it started out where this family had a squabble before everybody went to school and work, and they carried that anger with them throughout the day, and it showed how that anger kind of just mushroomed throughout the day. And then it showed what would happen if the family had made up and everything was fine, and how by them going to their places of work and school, they were happy, they felt good about themselves, and they passed this on to the people that they met. And it was like a wave. It just kind of mushroomed forth. So we don't know the effect that we can have on somebody throughout the day. And by doing it not because we want them to say thank you, but because you can tell somebody's face that they need to have a good word said to them. So, it's this is so powerful at so many levels, this pledge. Yes, in the back.
So, what's the relationship between Kuan Yin and Kuan Shi Yin? Is there a difference really, or just one is considered male, the other is female?
Well, Kuan Shi Yin is representative of the first Logos, that the sound, that thrill that went through the universe. And Kuan Yin then is representative of the second Logos, which is a female. The first one was male, and is just a little more. We just lost what we were going to say. Is a little more in materialization. So they are different, but they're two. It's like when we talk about a hand, the front and the back makes one hand. It's the same thing. It's Kuan Yin and Kuan Shi Yin, male and female. Nature and materialism, and it makes one whole universe. Yes.
Is it there any relation between this part and when we pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States?
Oh, you're talking about a pledge? Well, we think it depends on the person, on the motive, and what the person, what is in the person's heart when they make that pledge. Because it, we think that after a while, we were saying it in grade school and then middle school and then in high school, it becomes rote. So we think it has, it depends on each person individually as to whether there's going to be that motive there of love for the country and the flag, and we think it's all individual. If anybody else wants to add to that. Yes.
We think that's, it's just your typical materialistic degradation of, in this case, the high ideas that the founders of the Constitution, the founders of the country intended. You know, we're not supposed to worship a flag, but honor the ideas upon which the country is founded. Whether or not the current leaders follow them is not the issue. But anybody who has a problem with the freedoms that the that are inherent to our Constitution, you know, I think if they really understood that the pledge was to the principles of the Constitution, they'd be less likely to, you know, they'd be less likely to denigrate the flag, unless they have a religion which forbids those kinds of freedoms. Then they're going to put that religion above.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, any kind of a pledge sets something in motion. You're pledging something. You're really saying it to your higher nature, even though it's very mundane. So, pledging the flag every day became rote, but it also made an impression that I would serve my country, I would do this, I would do that, you know, and it sort of made me blind to the fact that maybe my country isn't as good as or as great as I thought it was. And it could be, wouldn't think that because we're pledging allegiance, and which is, it's just the root of nationalism, of separateness, of, you know, each country being for themselves. So making a pledge of any sort is a serious matter, and one in which one should consider what one is doing. Now, as a means of solidarity, when you pledge a flag, yes, you're creating a solidarity within the group that you're doing that with. But again, you're promoting a kind of nationalism, a kind of separateness, a kind of, you know, but there's a lot of things that are associated. Mentioned the founding fathers as ideals and all those principles. So yes, we take all kinds of pledges in our life. We become Boy Scout or Girl Scout or, you know, any kind of what we pledge. We pledge ourselves to do our best, to do our duty to God.
And to help every, what is it, help each person, and I know I'm trying to remember the Girl Scout pledge. But
it was help somebody across the street.
No, that's Boy Scouts. No, but it, truly though, when making a pledge, I mean, it is an important, it's not just saying, yeah, I'll do it kind of a thing. Making a pledge is from your higher nature and is something that should be taken seriously and not something frivolously, like we do. And we love it at the end of the year, our classes, we talk about making resolutions, and it is so different making a resolution and making a pledge. You can't compare the two, but with a pledge, one definitely has to take it seriously, think about it, and, you know, from your higher nature. Yes.
Well, when we take a pledge, aren't we activating the spiritual power of will, of which very little is said in the philosophy, but it's a very spiritual thing. So when we take a pledge seriously, we're activating our will.
Yes, that's something that we could talk about. We have a couple more minutes left. Is that... the whole idea with will, behind will stands desire. So when we're looking at this idea of a pledge, then, what is your desire? Why are you wanting to do that? And is it from your higher nature? Is it, you know, is it a non-material thing? Because that's one thing we need to make sure that we're looking at, is that when we make a pledge, that it is from that higher aspect of oneself. So once the desire is known, will, as was stated, sets in motion what it is that person is going to be pledging, and then the pledge can be made from that, from the proper perspective. You had your hand up?
Yes, but I forgot.
Oh, okay. Well, let us know. You have 3 minutes.
Well, I was just memorizing while you're explaining.
Yes.
We pledge, when we say the marriage vows, we pledge to each other. But as time progresses, there is something comes up to make us think twice. And it's a perfect example of what true love means. Through thick and thin, I can't love you if you don't love me. It's the typical situation. But here we learn to be charitable and devoted, come what come may, because we have a principle in mind rather than our selfish personal concern. This is what frightens me.
This is what?
Frightens me.
Oh.
And when they discover the meaning of sincerity and the battle before his engagement wounds selfishness, not outside.
Great. Thank you very much. And our meeting is over.